We talked about conflict as a slippery slope. So when you see yourself entering into conflict, you should instantly think about that. Danger is ahead. How will I respond? Will I try and escape? Will I try and attack? Or will I try and work it out? What causes conflict? Where does conflict come from? Yeah, see, we need to review. Remember that? It comes from the heart, my heart attitudes. My heart leads to me to make choices, and choices have consequences. Good choices or bad choices lead to bad consequences. Good choices lead to good consequences. And if you don't like the consequences you're facing in life, change your choices. So, in terms of choices, there are wise way choices or my way choices. And again, the helpful summary of that is only two choices on the shelf, pleasing God or pleasing self. Has anyone noticed when I've said that, that's actually poetry? Kind of a rhyme there? Good, good. Playing the blame game is trying to blame the other person, trying to cover up, avoiding blame, making excuses. Remember, the skin of the... An excuse is the skin of the truth stuffed with a lie, or the skin of a reason stuffed with a lie. Pretending everything's fine, lying to cover up. Conflict is an opportunity. That's an important lesson. So instead of getting upset when we see a conflict arising, we should see it as an opportunity to glorify God in our response, to serve others in how we minister God's truth, and to be more like Christ. You should be able to think through the five ways to resolve a conflict. You will need these. We admit we're wrong. We apologize for the hurt we've caused. We accept the consequences of what we have done. We ask for forgiveness, and we alter our behavior. Or another way to think of that is we confess and we repent. Forgiveness is a choice. We talked about the fact that really there are four biblical promises that we think about in terms of forgiveness. Altering choices, we talked about the STAY program. Stop, go back to the root of your problem. Think about a course of action. Put it to action. In other words, plan your actions and put them into action. And then the yay is after you go back and evaluate. Was it successful? Yay. If not, let's try another angle. So we walk through that process. Last week, we talked about the concept of think before you speak. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles. And maybe most of us can experience, maybe think back in some bitter way to a time we didn't guard our mouth and we did come into troubles. He guards his mouth, preserves his life. He opens wide, his lips shall have destruction. In the multitude of words, there is sin. Think before you speak and think before you act. And our actions in terms of, like we talked about, like kind of the whole body language, we can express things. I think I left more of these up. Are these guys happy or sad? They're having a good conversation, right? Were these guys having a good conversation? Probably not. So if you're talking to someone like that, how likely are they to listen? Does this really convince people? I think of what happened in Washington, D.C. After the inauguration, there were some parades or some marches that were pretty hostile. And, for example, one thing I saw videos of them smashing out the windows at a Starbucks. Well, do you think that convinces people, wow, maybe we need to change our behavior? Or does that cause a response of resentment, I'm not going to listen to you? That really, I don't think, changes too many minds. Now, when a guy's talking to you like this, he might persuade you to change your ways. We also think before you confront. Confrontation is a biblical concept. But remember, do you have a log in your own eye? Do you have the problem yourself? Again, So that's you know, is this a struggle I have? I've been a little bit surprised in recent days, some of the marches and all that, and some of the attitudes people have seemed to express. A lot of one of the things they're complaining about with great anger and great hostility is that the other side is hateful. And it struck me that, you know, this is a perfect example of walking around with a plank in your eye, looking at the speck in the other people's eyes. You know, if you're the one burning cars, smashing windows, and saying we're here to protest hate, that's probably, you know, you might want to take a look in the mirror and see if there's a plank hanging out of your eye. Well, that's just, you know, all of us can be inclined in this way. So take the speck out of, you know, be careful. Think before we confront. So we've talked about conflict as a slippery slope. It starts in the heart. Choices have consequences. We want to make wise way choices instead of my way choices. Talk about the blame game, conflict as an opportunity, the five A's, forgiveness as a choice. Not too late to start doing what's right. Think before you speak. We come now to respectful communication that's more likely to be heard. So we're going to talk about just again, how do we talk to someone so that we can be heard? I heard of a philosopher who agreed to be in a debate over, does, you know, Christianity true or false. And he was just powerful in the debate and basically destroyed his opponent. But after the debate, I remember hearing that his thoughts to himself and his feeling was, I may have won the debate, but I lost the person. You know, because of his approach in dealing with issues, you know, as he wasn't regretting that he stood for the truth, but the way he did it wasn't winsome. And so that's one of the things we need to think about. What is a winsome way? What is a persuasive way? How do we win the person to write? And again, that might start with my apologizing for my own problems. So in our terms of our lesson, it's called the communication pie. We'll now take a break and I'll go eat apple pie in the next room and have a cup of hot tea to go with it now. But here, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. Corrupt is has the idea of that which is rotten. If you still have something left over from, say, Thanksgiving in your refrigerator, it might be an illustration of corruption. You know how the stuff kind of liquefies in there after a decade or two. Let no corrupt, no rotten word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. So that's kind of our standard as we're talking through conflict. But a conflict, often the first response is corrupt words, hurtful words, destructive words, instead of building up words and Christ-honoring words. Well, in this pie, we're going to slice it up into four slices. Respectful words, respectful tone of voice, respectful body language, respectful listening skills. We can all learn from this. Again, this curriculum is geared towards kids, and I can think of some of the ones we work with. And how vital it is to learn some of these patterns of communication. Adults need it too. So the first one we're going to look at, the first slice of the pie, is respectful words. So as we're talking, here's the Colossians 4:6 reminder. Let your speech always be seasoned with grace, or be always being with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Now, lots of things there. We're supposed to answer each one. What that tells me is I may have a different way of approaching different individuals. For example, if you're teaching Sunday school or your own kids or whatever the context may be, have you noticed that some students take one approach and some students take another approach? In the same way, I may have to deal with different people in a different way in my communication, but it's to be appropriate. So spending some time thinking about this individual, what is it that will help me communicate to them? But also, what kind of words is it seasoned properly? So we need to pre-taste our words. You know, what they say is, Let your words always be sweet in case you have to eat them later. So, that's one of the good reminders today. Again, one of the things that destroys all this is social media. And one of the things that's interesting about social media is you can blast out a response or a comment very quickly. Theoretically, the whole world can see it. And the interesting thing is, it's kind of like words, you know, how you can't pull them back once they're in, but it's amazing. Some people will even tweet things they shouldn't say. And then, even though they go back and delete it, it's one of the miracles of the computer. The internet has a memory. And a lot of times you can recall that and publish it for everybody to see. And so there's wisdom in kind of tasting your words. In the old days, when people wrote letters by hand or notes by hand, common wisdom was if you were writing an important, controversial, confrontational kind of a letter, there was a lot of wisdom in write the letter and then put it in your drawer for a day or so, come back and reread it. Or maybe sometimes it's helpful, let someone else look at this. How's this strike you? I think you need a little more salt of grace in there. That needs a little more help. Or maybe someone would say, you know, you got too much grace. Where's your hammer? You know, but thinking, tasting our words and not just shooting off at the mouth. So we want to weigh our words to, you know, this concept being respectful speech. Two key things. Is it the truth? Is it really the truth? Or is there an edge of truth to it and a lot of lie? You know, because you might be able to say, well, that part of it was true. Or, you know, just like they used to, well, I don't know, do they still say in the courts, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? In other words, a half-truth is a whole lie. But thinking through, am I really speaking the truth here? But sometimes we need to make sure we speak the truth with love. And, for example, sometimes that means measure how much, if we give someone all the truth that they need all at once, it can be a little overwhelming. And so sometimes it has to be done gently and thoughtfully and graciously. And sometimes you might say, well, I'll talk about that one later, especially maybe when they've settled down or something. But weighing our words, are they truthful? Are they loving? Are they going to build up? Or are they just meant to vent my frustration and anger? So give them a good taste. So respectful words is part of that process. And so again, think before you speak. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So choosing our words carefully as we approach it. Can you give an example? Any thoughts come to mind about the importance? You know, don't get too graphic about something someone, especially in here, said wrong, but can you think of examples where choice of words can make an important difference? Pardon me? All the time, yeah. When don't they make a difference? Okay. Yes, Mark. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, sir. When you're getting a ticket, it's a good time to be gracious and speak. You know what? When you're giving a ticket, a lot of times, that's an important time to have grace and find out what's going on and speak kindly. Yeah. But when you get into it, especially when there's a confrontation like that, you can do that in a lot of ways. I remember hearing one person was being pulled over by a police officer for a significant excess of the speed limit. And the fellow said, you know, ma'am, you're old enough to be my mother. You really need to slow down here. So please be careful. He wasn't flaming at her. He was just trying to keep people safe on the road. You know, so the wisdom of choosing our words carefully. Yes. Good. In parenting, may I just say, Isn't it true we tend to take down the filters the more familiar we are with people? And yet, on the other hand, those are people that might be most hurt by what we say. You yell at someone outside the window, driving by them on the highway, they're probably not going to go home and grieve over how unkind you were. You say the same words to someone close. So yeah, just measuring those words. Okay? So, respectful words. Thinking about the words we choose. And just doing that's going to cause us to slow down. Next, our tone of voice can be significant. This kind of illustrates that. And again, I think about the marches in Washington, D.C., or in, I guess, other places. Just the tone came across as harsh and not something that's not really going to build any bridges. Where if we can go and express ourselves graciously, that tends to open up doors. I think of someone that was involved in, has been involved for many years in going to an abortion clinic and talking to the people outside the clinic going in. They don't use the approach that's described here, but rather it's a very gracious, caring. We're here because we love you. And there was an incident where someone in the clinic on the staff had a problem, and guess who they went to talk to their problem about? One of the people who had been outside. Because they have been so gracious consistently, that person said, I know they care. You know, so are we building bridges or are we bombing bridges? And our tone of voice, even if you say the right word, so I've often thought of playing games, you know, here's dogs. How do they really know what you're saying? Well, they do learn a few words, right? In my family, we have to be careful about using the W word. If you say walk, you have to be ready to put your shoes on because the dogs are going to want out. If you say food or eat, their ears pick up. You know, because they've learned certain words. It doesn't matter what tone of voice you use. They know what those words mean. But most of the time, dogs can kind of tell. So here's a kind of a little cartoon. You can kind of fool your dog by saying, you know, you want to go for a ride. And sometimes that means, oh, fun, we're going to the park. And sometimes that means we're going to the vet. And so a lot of times you can kind of tell what kind of ride it is by tone of voice. Does our tone of voice communicate what we're trying to say? Okay. So, just a reminder. Sometimes when we're excited, our tone of voice becomes inappropriate. And we talked last time about body language, just how we express ourselves with our mannerisms. This is one of the pictures. You don't even have to hear a tone of voice. How's this conversation going? Not so good, right? Yeah, but it's bad. And so matter of fact, have you ever been in one of these situations? You're walking along and you see a conversation across the street, and you know how that conversation is going? Right? Haven't you ever noticed you can, ooh, something's going on over there? And then there's a conversation, you know. So if you saw someone looking like that, he's probably not saying, those are the best pancakes I've ever had. He's not looking happy. Now, if this someone comes to you looking like this, what's the likelihood that you're going to be cooperative? That you're going to receive their words? That's the whole point. Now, if this guy comes to you, you know, whatever he wants, sure. I mean, doesn't that make a difference? And so, for example, you know, sometimes you have to store, you have to go to the complaint counter or whatever, the returns counter. You know, if you come with a lot of hostility, that's probably what you're going to get back. If you come with a kind of a, boy, you must have had a, you know, they knowing they've had a hard day all day, and come with a gracious spirit, a lot of times they can work with you on that. So just our demeanor as we approach things is a good reminder. So here's some body language. Here's some actions that tell us what's community. Is this, can you tell, is this good body language on these pictures? This is from your book, or is this bad body language? Not good, huh? Okay, I don't think so. You know, they're slumping, they're angry, they're storming off. You can just, again, you can see this across the street and tell what's going on. How about this one? How's this conversation going? Yeah, good. Again, so just some reminders. Just how we communicate makes a lot of difference. So are the words we choose, our tone of voice, our physical posturing are all communicative. By the way, as I'm saying this, some of the things reminds me of things I heard in preaching class. You know, if you're up there talking about the love of God and you're shaking your fists at the people, they're saying, wait a minute, you may evaluate, what are you trying to communicate? You know, and so the tone should communicate that. And that's not uncommon. A lot of these examples, the boys, if the story behind it, the boy's got a problem with the father and he's got to be more, respond differently, yeah. So, yeah, he's trying to build that bridge. But really, the parents should be modeling that too. So the final one is, so respectful words, respectful tone of voice, respectful body language, respectful listening skills. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. So when a situation is coming up, we should first try to listen before we start to speak. Okay, so that's what James is talking to us about, being quick to listen to the other side rather than quick to tell you what we think. Stoic philosopher Epictetus said, nature has given men one tongue but two ears, that we may hear from others twice as much as we speak. So we have two ears. That's an ear. The other one's an earring on this lady, but I had to throw this one in. So she's really ready to listen. So she's got two ears on each side. But maybe more naturally, we all have two ears, okay, for listening. Well, that's not entirely true, by the way. I've got to be accurate when I'm teaching you. Do all animals have two ears? Do all creatures have two ears? Can you think of an exception? they don't have one ear, yeah. I think it would have to be in the animal world that has ears. Good point. Amoebas don't. Well, you may not, all this may be familiar to you, so you may not have learned anything tonight. You will now learn something. The praying mantis has one ear. Don't you feel better about that, just knowing that? It's the only animal known to man, and the praying mantis and his family of mantids only have one ear. But since they pray, they're supposed to talk more. I mean, that's their job. They're prayers, right? So they're supposed to talk more. But they only have one ear. It's on their abdomen. Aren't you glad you learned that? So I want to talk about respectful listening. And the first thing I want to say is there's a difference between listening and hearing. Okay? So this little dog is, let's say, listening. Or scratching his ear, yeah. Well, I don't know, the ear is up. Listening, I'm going to put it to you this way, right? Listening means you may hear the words the other person is saying, but you don't really take them in, and your words don't reflect that you've heard. So there's a way of listening where it doesn't really register. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever, for example, talked to someone you could just tell? I had a friend, I used to say, what, you know, in conversations with him, I said, stop, you're speed listening again. I could just tell, you know, he wasn't engaging, and I'd have to stop him and say, listen to what I'm saying. But it's possible for, you know, the words hit your ears, but it doesn't go anywhere. Have you noticed you can be that way when you're reading sometimes? Even your Bible? I have to confess to you, there are times I'm reading along, and I'll think, you know, I can't remember what I just read about in the last period. My eyes saw, as a matter of fact, now this year I'm using again an audio Bible and I'm reading the Bible alongside, but still sometimes I have to go back and let's do that paragraph again, because my eye was moving, I was hearing the words, I was listening, but I was not hearing. Back up, let's go over this one again. So it's possible so you can listen, but not hear. And here's the problem. Have you ever been guilty of or maybe been talking to someone? One of our struggles is sometimes when we're in a conversation, we're more thinking about what I'm going to say next than what is this person telling me? You know, and so it's basically can become two people talking at each other, but you're not really engaging. What is this person saying? That's listening. As opposed to hearing. That's my point. Pardon me? Yeah. Yeah, and especially you're trying to craft your words so it's just right and effective. And this guy's talking away. You're not even noticing it because you're so worried about what you're going to say. Yeah. I'll finish your sentence for you, but I wasn't going to say that, or you should have said that. So, but again, if you think about it, that's really selfishness. Where if we're truly loving the other person, then we want to hear what they're saying. So, and for me to effectively answer them, I should probably know what they're saying. One of my strategies in school has always been to carefully understand the question before I give an answer. And you notice sometimes people don't really think through. And that was one of the first things I would always think through on an assignment, whether it be an exam or working on writing a paper. The first thing I try to wrestle with, what's the question? I just got an email and I've been asked to write some stuff on some things. And the first thing I'm going to be doing tomorrow is sending an email. You know, tell me more about what's the objective here. What's the goal? What is it you're trying to get to? So listening before it just starts spouting answers. And sometimes it gets actually silly. You know, you get up and you start asking someone a question. They're going to tell you, maybe you're at the mechanic, and you walk up and he's kind of anxious about it. So he starts telling you everything that's wrong with your car and why it has to be fixed that way. And you say, no, excuse me. I just wanted to know where the restroom was. Oh, okay. Down the hall. So it's good to listen before you speak. Hearing, Mark tells us, if anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. That's our Lord speaking. He often would kind of make you think, what do you mean? If you have ears to hear. In other words, he's saying, put your ears to work. And so if I could describe hearing, I would think of it like this. Listening, the words hit your ear and have nothing to do with what comes out of your mouth. Hearing, the words come into your ear, but then it goes to your brain. By the way, this is an actual MRI of a brain. This is what they look like. That's not true. From the brain, you know, it engages with your heart. So you don't just think about things, but also it has to be filtered. That's the truth and love issue. That's the compassion issue. That's concern for the person and what they're talking about. And sometimes it's easy to miss the fact that person told you that for a reason. They wanted you to know how happy they were, or they wanted to know how upset they were. They wanted to know how angry they are at you. And so we might just fixate on the facts and miss that. That was something very important that person wanted to tell me. And that takes a pause to hear that. So from the ear to the brain, to the heart, and then to the mouth and out. That's hearing. That's using listening and hearing in our conversation. Does that make sense? So, again, what this tends to do is slow us down, make us thoughtful and intentional to weigh our words, to taste our words, to think about how am I going to say this, and then express it. Sometimes that's why it's valuable if it's a very important issue. Like if you know, the waiter asks, you know, do you want ketchup with that? You know, you don't have to really carefully weigh how's he going to take my answer. Just kind of a yes or no will do. But sometimes it might be something really important, and you might say, you know, I need to think about that and weigh it through. Here's some passages that address these issues. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Here's selfishness. But in lowliness of mind, there's humility. Let each esteem others better than himself, or as more important, or as the first issue, putting others first. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interests of others. So in this whole conversation, if I'm really not just saying I want to be heard, but I care about this person, then that's going to come across in the words I choose, the tone I choose, how I express myself, and the fact, and also that means I'm going to listen to them so I can hear what their concerns are. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love in honor, giving preference to one another. Again, what's important is not that they hear what I have to think necessarily, but, you know, I want to hear from them. Let no one seek his own, but each the other's well-being. Love does not behave rudely. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. So again, love, all these are pointing to humility and love. take my eyes off myself and put them on the other person. And that's how we have a conversation. When my goal is your well-being. Have you ever had a conversation with someone and that's really their intent, and it just, what a blessing and encouragement that is. And so as we have these conversations, and even in our conflicts and our confrontations, that should be our objective, instead of just venting my frustration or irritation. How you doing? Does that make sense? These are just some of the practical how-tos for the lesson. Anything I say that's absolutely controversial, be careful how you answer. Make sense? Makes sense. Okay. So, that's about all I'm going to say on this. This is chapter 11. Next week's chapter 12.